This is the story of Douglas, Doug Longstaff. You won't find Doug's name in the annals of history, or even as a regular in local dispatches. But his story is important in local history, much more than a footnote and nod to past times. Doug's diaries detail community life in Sheffield, indeed in the north, in the earliest part of the 20th century. A community bound together by punishing industries, a love of life, sport, and of course, good humour. In the grey of December, here on Doug was born at home on the 23rd of October 1919 with breathing difficulties, and there were doubts he would survive until the following morning. However, he did not only survive, but thrive for the next 95 years. It all started with childhood memories.
I recall most of my childhood being happy, feeling safe. Good parents, my mother especially so. She was always there, at home or nearby, when we needed her. Sister Florrie, 3 years older, and brother Harry, 2 years older. Dad worked at Tinsley Rolling Mills, head roller. Our house was one of a group of 12 courthouses, 6 at the front, 6 at the back, and so-called back-to-back. Outside lavatories, 6 between 12 families. Coal-fired oven, good for baking bread and bread cakes. A gas ring for frying and boiling water in a big kettle. There was also a copper boiler or set pot, as it was called. A fire underneath. Lighting was by gas mantle. Flimsy, delicate ones. Upturn or downturn. They lasted about 4 months. One in summer, two in winter. But cheap, about 4 pence. No bathroom, used a big zinc bath. Brother, sister and myself took turns on a Sunday morning when we were very young. As we got older, we used the zinc bath at night on different nights or go to the public baths, situated above swimming baths a mile away in Attercliffe.
That's the voice of John, Doug's son. He's documented his dad's life through a diary and will be Doug's voice throughout these podcasts. You can clearly visualise the family home at 159 Dunlop Street, Carbrook. A life and a home common to many Sheffield families of that time.
Recalling my younger days, where we, our family, lived among friends and neighbours in Carbrook, sandwiched between Tinsley, Brightside, Darnell and Attercliffe, Dunlop Street ran from Janson Street to Eden Street, quite a long straight road, with houses on both sides, but of different character. Terraces, and some with front rooms, and others with back gardens. Our house had living room and bedroom above, then garret above the bedroom. Also, an extra room, which was situated over the big entry, separating our block of back-to-back, 3 pair either side of the entry, which had a pole in the middle to prevent hawkers with the carts going down.
Garrets and hawkers. Garret, for the one young person who's listening to this, that'll be an attic. As for hawkers or peddlers, they sold their wares from street to street, moving in between the children as they played.
The yard where us children could play was quite big. I mean, we played for hours at a time, especially in summer on school holidays. The streets were full of children engaged in enjoying their different games, all laughing and excited. What fun we all had. I mean, quite a change from today, a different world. In the 1920s, nearly 100 years ago, I remember sleeping with Mum and Dad until I was 3 years old, then joining Sister Flo and Brother Harry in the garret. Harry, when he was 9, became ill with rheumatic fever, and spent the next 6 months in hospital at Western Bank, 3 miles away in Sheffield, where he was well looked after, but it left my brother Harry with a heart condition, which years later, when the Second World War started, prevented him from joining me in the army. That was another heartbreak story, unfortunately, and brought a tragic ending, terrible to say, 4 years later. Made it race
against time. Doug worshipped his older brother, Harry. He followed him everywhere, including on bike rides. Harry and his mates had modern bikes, Doug an old iron sit-up and beg bike. When they got too far in front, he had to turn back on his own.
To go back before then, as we got a little older, Harry went to sleep with a cousin, my mother's sister's lad, our Bill, leaving me and Florrie, and later still Florrie, having a bed of her own. It was a big bedroom and solved the sleeping problem. Then there were times when the pub used to run trips to different places. I remember the old Contemptible, Sharabang, going to Dukeries and Robin Hood's Oak Tree at Edwin's store near Nottingham. I'd be about 2.5 years old. First time I went, sitting on Mam's knee, and when I was 6, sitting next to an old lady dressed all in black. She was 100, at a table in a pub yard, and bumping my head stepping into Robin Hood's Oak Tree. Coming home, the people would be singing old songs like With Someone Like You, A Pal Good and True, Nellie Dean, and so on. Other trips they went on were Derbyshire Dales, Yorkshire Dales, and Doncaster Races, as well as the seaside, mainly Cleethorpes. I mean, I remember going there with Florrie and Harry and Mam and Dad. After coming back to the pub, the men used to chuck coins in the air and shout, "Scrumps!" Us kids used to dive to pick the pennies up. Talk about pennies from heaven. And the men would organise races for us to take part in the street. Dunlop Street it was. One race, I was put in front, so many odd start, as I was only small. But I won and got 3 pennies. I mean, the year 1925, Sheffield United won the Cup.
And once again, all roads lead to Wembley. They say that 100,000 will pass through the turnstiles. And if anyone's got a ticket that he isn't going to use, a few thousand others will want to know the reason why. Every street is a moving stream of favour-wearing fans.
I remember plainly. And Sheffield Wednesday came up from the second division the year after, so when the next season started, the big lads who were Wednesday arts used to knock us United arts about. Kickers whenever we played football together. I was only 6, but I could play. And I was quick. Always have been.
I think that I shall never see.
It wasn't all play for the young Douglas Longstaff. As a 10-year-old, he sold Pinkins on a Saturday night. Now the Pinkin was a rival to the Greenin. The Greenin, a penny. The Pinkin, 2 pennies. That's all pennies for the young person who's listening to this. They sold much slower than the Greenin, and Dad, John's dad, was out until midnight trying to sell them. As a 12 and a 13-year-old, Doug ran a small business with a pal. They went round wasteland, the canal, woods and derelict houses collecting wood, which they chopped down to kindling and sold it in bundles as firewood. In addition, they would collect clinkers. That's the residue from steelworks furnaces or along railway lines, and although this was allegedly incombustible, it was used to supplement coal or wood on fires. Maybe retained heat? Who knows? Coal and coke in small quantities was collected from land near the steelworks, the railways, the canals, and the nearest pit, which was Orgreave.
In trying to recall my childhood days, I remember quite a lot that still sticks in my memory. The street in Carbrook where we lived was called Dunlop Street, number 159, one of 12 back-to-back houses, court houses, with a big yard at the rear, in which were the outside lavatories. 6 of them, one shared by 2 families, and were kept very clean. Toilet paper was newspaper cut into squares, stuck on a nail, knocked in the inside door. 6 bins either side of the yard for our 12 families to place our refuse. The neighbour's family, Mr and Mrs Hall, son Charles, Sonny, daughter Irene, had the bottom room. We had the top one. I mean, the 2 end houses at the back had a slop kitchen each, with a sink, a place to do their washing in, with old-fashioned wringing machine and wash tub, with rubbing board. The rest of us had them in our living room, between the front door and window. Wash day, as I recall, was always on a Monday. Mam would be doing it while Dad was at work, and we, Sister Florrie, Brother Harry, Sonny, our son, we called him, and me, were at school. We hated wash days. It wasn't so bad in the summer months, but winter was awful. Clothing was left to dry or air off, rammed a fire on clothes horses and across the living room above our heads, till next day. Grandad, Hiram Hancock, who was blind, helped Mam by turning the mangle to squeeze the clothes full of water. He was Grandma's second husband on my Mam's side. He were a big man and strong, a good man. A shame he was blind. I like Grandad Hancock, and I used to read the Star to him each night.
Climb up on my knee, sonny boy. Though you're only three.
Like many Sheffield back streets in the 20s and 30s, it was a vibrant place to be, both in and out of the household, and where everyone knew everyone in the community.
There was a big yard at the back leading towards the River Don, which was walled off for safety reasons. One family man kept pigeons for racing. We couldn't play in the yard when there was a race on. Mr. Coles was the man. He shouted us to keep quiet. Me and his son Harry were pals. Another family kept hens for egg laying and one cock. There was an adjoining yard where we could also play. All this came later when we started school. Before then, when I was about 2 years old, I remember being in my mother's arms and my dad being present. He'd be 25, Mam 23. Through the front door of the main street was a chair for any visitor or neighbours to sit on invitingly. Dad used to say, "It's an ever-open door." In winter, we cuddled up together with an oven plate warmed up, covered in a towel, and top coats on the bed to keep us warm. It was the opposite in summer, too warm. In the bedroom was a gas bracket which could be used for upturned gas mantle. But in the garret, we had to use a candle. No carpets or rugs on the floor, nor were the walls papered. Instead, there were whitewashed ceilings and pinkish-coloured walls. Mam used to do them. She did most things. The house bugs were a nuisance, and bed bugs, which all the back-to-back families had to deal with, like a plague. But come spring, and all the neighbours did their cleaning outside, doors and windows. Front steps and windowsills were scrubbed and donkey-stoned and were made to look spotless. The women, mothers, did a good job. Dad did the cobbling. Our shoes with leather from work. Soft and pliable, easy to cut. I liked him best when he'd had some beer. Dad was very talkative and told us stories of sportsmen of the day and asked us sporting questions like who won the cup in Yorkshire or who was the first Yorkshire team to win the cup. And which team won but never scored a goal. After Dad had come back from the pub on Sundays, had dinner, gone to bed, Mam would get house or lotto out and we'd play for peanuts and raisins and spice. Or we'd play Ludo, snakes and ladders, or guessing games, I spy with my little eye. But when the weather was fine, we would all play outside in the yard or in the street. The streets used to be full of us kids playing games. We were very happy.
Kids were playing outside, different games in the 20s and 30s. Doug attended Coleridge Road School and his memories were vivid, but never far away was his brother Harry, who he so admired.
My brother Harry, 2 years older, and sister Florrie, another year older, slept in the garret where I joined them in later years. Harry spent 18 months in Western Bank Hospital with rheumatic fever, aged 8 to 9 and a half. Before this sad affair, remember Mam taking me to school when I was 5, in the infants, the gate being in Carbrook Street. The gate in Dunlop Street was for juniors and seniors up to 12 years of age. Girls had a separate yard and classrooms. First day in class, reading a book, a small book about three birds. The headmistress was called Miss England, same name as my grandma's single name. Having my photo taken with my sister Florrie and brother Harry, son, we were playing in the street. A photographer with our dad went round the back in front of our grandma's house, took our photos. I recall having a party in the nativity play when 6 at Christmas 1925. I started watching and walking to Hillsborough with brother Harry, aged 9 and 11. Catching a tram to Bramall Lane I was United, Harry Wednesday.
The general strike is a direct challenge to ordered government. There can be no question of a compromise of any kind. Either the country will break the general strike, or the general strike will break the country.
1926 miners' strike. We went to the coal waste tip, raking anything that would burn, including canal waste, which was scooped off the bottom and deposited on the banks of the canal. Mam and her elder sister, my Auntie Flora with her, youngest son, a year older than me, cousin Bill, gathered this waste. It was called Jubilee, in our old prams or barrows. One day, Mam and Auntie Flory had to pull and drag us out of the Jubilee. It was up to our knees. We'd sunk in it. We had to walk all the way home before we could get cleaned up. Then I bent down in the sink, bumped my bum on the cold tap and finished up on the floor.
But that was long ago. Now my constellation is in the stars.
Home entertainment in the 20s and 30s was a world away from today's fast-moving technology. Local staples were still, at that time, the Sheffield Star and the Telegraph. However, there was no TV, and the radio, or wireless as it was known, was still less than 20 years old.
Reading the Yorkshire Telegraph and Star, or Final as it was called, for my step-granddad who was blind. One of the causes for my poor eyesight was school glasses. The light in their house was by paraffin lamp, one paraffin lamp. Grandma's house was in the backyard, so wasn't very bright indoors. Grandad had a wireless for the blind with headphones. We, my brother and me, used one earpiece each to listen in, especially football commentaries on Saturday afternoons. Not bad. Not good. Usually Arsenal matches.
Right down into the Chelsea half. They're working the ball through as hard as they can. Chelsea half-backs are tackling. Away comes the ball out to outside left. And the outside left right up into the Chelsea keeper's hands. So both goalkeepers have been in action. And now here come Chelsea racing away down. Another smart shot there. And it's pulled down by the Bolton keeper. Both sides right absolutely on the tips of their toes. And now here come Bolton again forcing the pace.
I also bring to mind playing in the Brook on the Pheasant Inn grounds next to the boxing ring, which had seats all round, with people watching the boxing, having paid at the entrance. I must have slipped away from Dad because a policeman took me back to him. Beyond the boxing ring was a clay football pitch. The grass had worn away except at the corners. A white concrete slab wall stood between the pitch and Broughton Lane station. The saying at the time, I found in my later years, it was going to become Wednesday's ground. A few years later, the Brook was directed through big concrete pipes and filled over with ashes from the steelworks, and football pitches were laid. We as lads played there till war broke out.
Give the gentleman the best in the house.
Yes, sir.
Oh, I'll be back in a minute.
There was a story behind every door in that street where Doug lived.
On a mountain in Virginia stands a lonesome pine.
Mrs. Bamforth lived with Bill Yakes, a miner, at Tinsley Park Colliery, her husband having died before I knew him. There were three sons and a daughter, Dolly. George was the eldest. He worked for Joe Emmons delivering coal, as did Ernest too. I liked him. He called me Clyde, after Andy Clyde, in those old black and white silent pictures, comedies. That nickname stuck with me until I was called up for the army. One day Ernest asked me to go with him delivering coal to his customers. George drove a truck, but Ernest had a horse and cart. I sat at the front of the cart with Ernest and his little girl. When we reached Norfolk Bridge, he lifted a bag of coal on his shoulders and dropped the contents down the woman's cellar. The horse became restless each time a tram passed us and started rearing up. The reins dropped on the road. I wasn't able to control the horse. I was too young. But finally, Ernest Bamforth came to the rescue, thankfully. I was getting scared, and his little girl too. I thought he was about to run away, with me and the little girl, innit? He didn't take me anymore.
In the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, on the
we had our photos taken in a group with Sister Florrie. with Sister Florrie's future husband Albert Utley, also Sonny Coles and Jimmy Bennett. It was taken in town, Fargate, a place called Jerome. I was 16 and a half years old, a bit shy, naive, scared of girls. First time I wore a tie, in winter, wore a white silk scarf with a top coat. Going to the pictures or watching United on Wednesday, always with our son Harry. On the trail of the lonesome
pub. But the late 20s and 30s saw the beginning of great change, locally for Doug and his family, but nationally and internationally as the Second World War was looming.
In the early 1920s, slum houses were being knocked down and families rehoused on council estates. New ones on Parson Cross and Shycliffe were where we were asked to go. Dad wouldn't. He wouldn't go. So Mum exchanged with a family living down the street at number 85 on the corner of Dunlop Street and Carbrook Street. So we had a lot of friends and visitors, but it was sad to leave 159 Dunlop Street in the end of an era. A childhood and early days as a teenager with my brother. This pledge to